Thank you, Valentina.
And with the meeting having not been recorded, there was no public comment during the public comment section, and the executive summary, the executive session was summarized this evening, took place before the meeting to discuss matters of potential litigation.
Thank you very much, Lauren and Valentina.
Okay. And thank you, Valentina, for that quick summary. The other item that occurred was the introduction of our new code enforcement and zoning officer, Matt McCluskey, to the members of council and the mayor. And that was it. That brings us to where we are now. And thank you, Lauren. And I'm sorry, Judy. All right. So next, the mayor's report.
You're muted. Parking.
Thank you. You have read through the policy department for internal affairs complaints, and I know that there's been some discussion back and forth with Chief about it, and I didn't know whether anybody else had any comments that they need to have or discuss in regards to that policy. But pretty much it's standard procedure. It's also pretty much standard practice to have everything, you know, put out the way it's put out. And in regards to the language and those things, it's been adopted from a thought by Sue Turner, and the way it was either misquoted or miswritten from the standpoint. So I think, you know, unless anybody has any more discussions or any more thoughts about it, it's just there for discussion and for policy, the policy of the police department.
So since it's new and we have members of the public listening in about it, we'd like Chief to give a sort of short summary. I know that the long version is, as Chief says, is a bit of a snooze fest. But to give the overall outline of it for the benefit of the public.
Just overall, the first thing it'll do is it'll differentiate a complaint from an inquiry. Most of what we'll get will be inquiries. They'll say, you know, why was, you know, this person stopped? You know, why did I get a parking ticket when I was only there for 5 minutes over the 3 hours? Those aren't listed as complaints. They're listed as inquiries where the officer has the ability to explain to the individual, this is the borough ordinance as far as for parking, you know, the reason why we have the parking ordinance is other shoppers are allowed to utilize those spaces. So it's better for the business owners and things along those lines. So anything that could be explained as the reason why an officer does something, it's listed as an inquiry. A complaint is when there is a allegation made either by one of the members of the department against, you know, another member of the department or from the public. The process for the initial complaint, if the complaint is provided to one of the supervisors, they then notify me of the complaint and I'll determine either if it's supposed to be a complaint with a formal investigation or an informal investigation. Most of the informal investigations would, you know, be the inquiries where people just had a question as to why this particular action was taken as an officer. If there is a allegation that requires investigation, then the investigative report is done by one of the either one of the corporals or myself, depending on the nature of the investigation. If it's of a serious nature, it will be investigated by myself. If there's any allegations that could give rise to criminal conduct, that there could be criminal charges, then that matter is discussed with the district attorney's office so that we have an impartial agency who's doing the investigation. Based on the policy as to whether or not there was a policy violation, if the district attorney's office determines that there's not a criminal investigation, there can still be a policy investigation. That report will then be, you know, turned over to the mayor as far as with a recommendation for what the discipline should be. We do have a disciplinary matrix which outlines what the violations are and what the penalties would be for those violations. It'll be based on first offense, second offense, third offense, fourth offense. There are some violations that would require dismissal on the first offense. There's other violations that would just be a reprimand on a first offense. Typically, the ones that will be handled by nothing more than a reprimand, they would, those would be listed more as an informal investigation. If the once the charges are delivered to the mayor, the officer will have a right to appeal any kind of suspension that would be before the Civil Service Commission. Civil Service Commission will have a hearing. There was one mistake that Sue pointed out on the policy. As far as that hearing, it listed that the hearing, the way it's written, each hearing shall be open to the public unless the accused officer, when making his or her written demand for a hearing, requests such hearing be closed. It should be that the executive session will be the default position unless the officer wants it to be a public hearing. So that's one change in language that has to be made. Basically, after that, the council is the one that has the ultimate decision for suspension. If the council suspends an officer, either suspends, terminates, or reduction in rank, then the officer has a right to appeal to the Civil Service Commission. If the Civil Service Commission upholds the council's discipline, then from there, they have a right to appeal that to the Court of Common Pleas in Doylestown. I don't know if there's any other questions anybody has on it.
Chief, I did have one question. Does this policy apply to the part-time officers as well as those who are covered under the Civil Service Commission?
The part-time officers don't share the same rights as the full-time officers do as far as the right to civil service. Part-time, you know, have no property interest in their rights. They're at-will employees, so they could be terminated without going through all of those steps.
And then my second question was, at what point does council get informed that there might be a complaint against an officer?
That's will be a mechanism that you'd want to discuss with the mayor. As far as that mechanism would be, that's above my pay grade, but you know, my report would go to the mayor and then it would be up to him as far as the mechanism for getting it to council. Okay, does that make sense?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay.
Can I follow up just on Julia's question, which the first one about the part-timers. So you talk about the part-timers not having as many rights, but does all the rest of it in terms of any behavior that may or complaints that may occur while they're on duty with Newtown Borough or any adjacent behavior, which is mentioned in the policy?
They're required, they're held to the same standards. They just don't have the protections of the Civil Service Commission as an appeal.
Got it. Thank you.
So by that, you mean so it goes to the same, you make the initial report, it comes to council for final determination, and then essentially the part-time officers can't appeal to the civil service, but can they jump straight to appealing to Common Pleas?
With the part-time officers, they don't have the civil service protections. They're at-will employees, whereas they're not tenured employees. The full-time officers fall under, you know, different codes as far as having property interest rights on their positions, where the part-timers do not. Make sense?
Yes.
Does anyone from the public have any questions?
Tara? Question for the chief. Chief, have these procedures been implemented since, or have they been utilized since you've been on the force here in Newtown?
No, we've had no formal complaints since I've been on the force, since February of 2018.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Okay, I'm going to take the one thing out of order there, and there was a motion to have the Newtown Brewfest approved for tonight, but that has been removed from, they have canceled the Brewfest. Newtown Fire Association has canceled the Brewfest for Saturday, September the 12th at the Stocking Works. So that's off the agenda. The next, I'd like to get a motion to approve the annual Black and White Dinner on State Street, sponsored by the Newtown Theater, to take place on Saturday, September the 12th, 2020, at 120 North State Street from 6 to 10 p.m. The road will be closed beginning at 3 p.m., and there is no rain date. I do have a list of things that was presented to me that I can share with all of you if you would like to go over those things after somebody makes a motion, or if you want me to read them before you make a motion, or you know, make the motion to approve that dinner.
Somebody would like to make the motion in a second, then we can have that discussion.
Oh, I'll make a motion to approve the 5th annual Black and White Dinner on the street as proposed. But I would also like to add that it be in compliance, with whatever CDC regulations or recommendations are in place at that time.
And that's part of what is coming out from them. Yeah, so.
Second.
Okay, the email that I got from the Newtown Theater, this year the Newtown Theater's 5th annual Black and White Dinner to be held on Saturday, September the 12th, due to COVID-19, we plan to make the following modifications to the dinner. We will limit the event to 250 people. We never actually had 250. Last year they had 190. We will not offer a movie at the theater at the end of the dinner as we usually do. Traditionally, we string together a long line of 8-foot tables down the middle of the road. We usually put 6 people to a table. This year we will put 4 people at each end of the table. So that the table can be spaced out. We will require people to wear masks, black and white only, when they arrive, they get to visit the restroom and they also have to get up to visit the restroom and leave, but not while they are sitting and eating. Finally, we will have hand sanitizers available at all at various locations throughout the evening. Since we have the motion, does anybody have any other questions?
Who brings the food to this event?
The patrons.
You bring your own.
There's no caterers.
No. It's a fundraiser, and part of the event is you bring your own.
Okay.
And your own decor. And this year, fancy masks are part of the decor, but they must be black and white.
The fancier, the better.
And I guess my only thought would be is that the motion will take precedence over that specific list, that if there is any more stringent rules in effect, then I think that then the more stringent rules would have to take place beyond that list, and that's already part of the motion.
Correct.
Okay. I think
I believe I distributed to some of us this evening a notice from the governor as to new recommendations. So I'll make sure that the mayor gets a copy of that so he can forward it on to the other people, because it deals with the mask issue.
Mm-hmm. So. Oh, thank you. Yeah, and I got that separately too. So I think everybody else may have got it.
And I haven't had a chance to review that yet.
Okay, yeah. Thanks.
So, but thanks, Bob. So
can I amend the motion, Tara?
Yeah, because I want a clear motion for Judy, because it's going to be all over the place.
Right, but can we amend it?
Yeah. I'd like to.
Sue, you had listed the CDC guidelines. Can we also include there the State Department of Health or Bucks County Department of Health? Because whoever is, I don't know exactly how to word this, but whoever is going to be determining what the particular status we are in at the time, it's going to be on a state or county level. I'm not sure exactly how that should be worded.
Do you want to remove CDC and just have the State Department of Health and Bucks County Department of Health?
I don't think you want to remove CDC, but I think you can add both of those to it, and I think that would probably be the best way to handle it.
The strictest of the options.
Okay. So, Julia, how do you want to say that?
To amend the motion to include compliance with the current or the state and county health department regulations in effect at the time of the event, in addition to the CDC guidelines.
Okay. Judy, is that good? I want to make sure you've got something that you don't have to go figuring out what it is. So I just want to make sure you're good.
He's muted.
Judy?
Yes, I'm sorry. I was saying that is completely fine. Thank you.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much. Okay, we've had the amended motion. Bob, do you want to second the amended motion? Oh, wait, was that Sue? I'm sorry. Judy, who?
I think Sue has to agree to amend it.
Yeah.
No, I'm fine to amend it, as Julia stated.
Okay, so we've got a motion.
Second the amended motion.
The amendment, the seconded amendment, and all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Motion passes.
Okay, thank you. Newtown Theater will appreciate all your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
That's all I have.
Okay, thank you. All right. Next up, we have the policy on filling vacancies. We had looked at this before and then taken it back for contemplation, and we're here again. So, Sue, would you like to take this over?
Sure. Unfortunately, my printer ran out of ink as I was trying to print my copy, but we have been talking about trying to formalize various policies in the borough. And this particular one, I hope, is ready for approval tonight, although there were a couple of questions about it that I think don't need to be addressed in the policy. So what this policy does is, again, just formalize the whole process for when there's a vacancy, whether it's, a routine vacancy because someone is at the end of their term, or a vacancy because someone resigns or for whatever reason has to leave their post, the process we follow to fill that. And I think the big difference for most folks is that there is a notification that there's a vacancy, so that anyone in the borough who is interested in that position would know about it and be able to apply. Whereas previously, for a lot of very good reasons, if someone just wanted to re-up, then that just happened automatically. So there wasn't necessarily an opportunity for new people to get involved. So that's really, I think, the substantial change from what we've been doing in the past. The rest is just formalizing what that process is. I don't know. Any questions about it?
So it's not so much of a question as, unfortunately, what I said over you today. Did you read? Okay. So you don't think that. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
No, just say, so you don't think any of that should be added, just because it shows procedure as far as when something comes into the office, how it's currently, you know, being handled, which I did not think of because I don't do that.
So the stuff that I read, one of the things was where we would post it in Borough Hall. And I mean, there are several boards inside the building. And this policy is for normal times, not right now when the building's locked. So I'm not sure that needs to be specified in there. There also was, and again, I apologize because I tried to print it and my printer ran out of ink. There was a comment about who notifies, should one person notify the liaison and the committee chair all at once. And that's fine. There's nothing that precludes that happening. It's just that we were trying to split it up a little bit because I personally dropped the ball with an appointment earlier this year, not thinking about the fact that Judy wasn't in the meeting. And so it fell through the cracks and the person wasn't notified and the chair of that committee wasn't notified. So we were trying to split it up so that just make sure we cover all of our bases. That doesn't preclude Judy or you or someone else notifying someone. It's just defining, I want to say who the responsibility lies with. It doesn't preclude someone else doing it, in okay. my opinion.
Okay. But go ahead, Judy.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. Because typically what I try to do, like the day after a meeting when there's appointments, is I, you know, will send an email, you know, to the individual, letting them know how the vote went, and copy the liaison, I'll copy the chair. And, you know, I update the directory. I will, at that point too, make changes to share file if it's a committee that has a share file account. You know, just some other things that, and I update the website. So I didn't want to, when I read that, I'm thinking, well, I don't want to leave out the chairperson, you know, in that correspondence. And certainly if the intent was that the liaison was to be that point, the initial point person to inform the chair, well, I wouldn't, you know, want to interfere with that. So it's just, I guess it's good that we have this conversation so that there's the understanding that it's, you know, we just want to make sure that the communication is there. And if you don't mind, if it comes, you know, from the secretary or the liaison, you know, whoever gets to it first, but just make sure that we get it communicated.
And right now you've really got both, because you've got the secretary communicating pertinent details to the board chair, and then the liaison forming the board. So Judy, right. You might say, hey, here's this new person's name, address, phone, or the phone number, their email. And then the liaison would then say, hi, we accepted so-and-so, you know. So if there was duplication there, I suppose that would be okay. Because that's what it looks like in the process.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, and again, I mean, it's like you said, it's covering the bases. The only question I had was, you know, we don't want to be like too redundant, you know, you don't want to like something coming out from the chairperson and then something coming out from Judy, and you know, now you're getting two email, I don't know, but that's fine. It's like you said, Sue, as long as this a mistake doesn't happen, I mean, it's better to have more people getting in touch than not,
right?
And then the only other question I had is, Kat, with the getting sent into the personnel versus the borough secretary on 2A. So I guess my only question for that would be, do we have to put something in that says like Judy has the, or excuse me, the secretary has the authority to like open that for me? Does that make sense? Because if it's coming to the personnel chair, I just, because she helps me out, especially in the summer, you know, and then sometimes facts are received, and then that's part of the application. So as long as everyone, like, as long as it doesn't need to be stated that the secretary, you know, can help out during that, because, you know, that she's sitting in the office.
So can we add, the secretary may open this mail?
That's fine.
Yeah.
Or just email to the secretary and personnel chair.
So yeah.
Or
so,
that's what we were.
Okay, there you saying. Go. Yeah.
And so like currently on the website, it says that an applicant can either drop it off at Borough Hall. This is not verbatim, but submit it to Borough Hall or send their application in to the attention of the personnel chair. So that's a little more, or a little less restrictive, I guess, because in the wording I read in the policy says specifically, you know, email, mail, it doesn't mention fax. So I think if we just say send and we leave that a little more open, because there are various ways. And then, of course, whenever I get it, I make Nicole aware of it and I put it right in share file. I mean, that's what.
Yeah,
that's what ultimately is happening.
Right. I just would hate that, you know, it's not going to my personal address at home. So if, you know, if it somehow gets put into my mailbox and then I don't see it and then I don't know about it. Right. That was my only concern.
Do you want to say sent to the attention, and it says personnel chair on the.
That's fine. I mean, I don't have a problem with that. It's just to know that there's the, the authority to open, I guess. I don't know. It's probably fine as written.
I don't want to do anything that I'm not supposed to be doing either. So that's why, I just want to make sure that I have a clear understanding.
Lauren, how should we write this so that future Nicoles and future Judys are not accidentally not opening it, or things are, there might be other ways to send them because, technology changes. So obviously we update this every year, so we could certainly change it. But is there some other way that we should do 2A?
So if I'm following this correctly, we want to make sure that all of these applications are forwarded directly to Nicole without being opened or otherwise read?
No,
the opposite.
The opposite, okay.
Can I just suggest that I'll revise the policy and we talk about it next week, and I'll circle back with Lauren or Valentina or someone and make sure that they're okay with the language. Is that all right?
Just on 2A though, right? I feel so bad because I got back to you so late.
Well, and I did respond, but it was late, probably even way later. Because the other issue that I recall, now that I'm thinking about it, is there was one about access to the folder. And the policy says that it will be a folder that is accessible by the chair. So my response to that, and tell me if this makes sense, is that either we open access to the existing folder or we create a different folder that those folks do have access to. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it's just that when let's pretend it was a hard copy, right? So as soon as it's scanned and it needs to be available, obviously, to the council, but it also needs to be in the one case that was stated, it also has to be available to the chair as well. And the chair doesn't have access to our council folder. And they also don't have, go ahead.
But there's a different folder as well, right, for applications?
So that's what I was saying. So maybe we could just give all chair persons access to the personnel folder. And then that way, I think that, that'd be good.
Okay.
And I think you can just kind of walk through it in the policy that the borough secretary will upload it to the whichever folder and,
Yep.
Okay, so you want to go over that, work it out, write it down. You can, have that email conversation, and then we can just officially vote on a resolution next week then, like you suggested, Sue.
Yeah, I mean, we have a resolution prepared, but we'll just put that up till next week, and I'll make proposed revisions. I'll send them first, if it's okay, to you, Judy, and Nicole, and then once we're all agreed, then I'll send them on to Lauren. Should I send them to you or Valentina?
You can send to both of us.
Okay.
And one of us will get back to you very quickly.
Yeah, you do. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So next, as everybody recalls, we've just updated our Civil Service Commission ordinance and added having a solicitor there who would advise the commission on laws and procedures, whether it's hiring, promoting, disciplining. We just had the conversation with Chief talking about the complaint process, and he mentioned how it could eventually go to Civil Service Commission if there's an appeal on a decision by council. So therefore, the Civil Service Commission needs a solicitor to advise it as needed. And Mike sent us the CV of Russ Sacco, which we've all distributed. And he is currently at Bristol Township as their Civil Service Commission solicitor, and he's done this since 2012, as well as being a solicitor for other areas, whether conflict, sewer, township solicitor, special counsel. And he's developed Civil Service Commission rules and regulations and overseen that process. So I don't know if anybody has any questions or comments on this recommendation, but I want to ask council, put it out there.
So is it normal, like, let's say, because the only other solicitor we have is zoning hearing. Is it normal that, I guess, the actual board doesn't, it's council's decision? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the board doesn't give recommendations, or commission, I guess, in this case?
Yeah, this is pretty standard for the civil service solicitor. The zoning hearing board is governed by the municipality's planning code, which does set forth that the zoning hearing board appoints its own solicitor.
So it's different.
But we can also, it can also be done from within too, from the Civil Service Commission, as well as interviewing before the, as Mike, per Mike's, you know, letter that came out. Do you think it's worthwhile to have the civil service appoint their own solicitor rather than having the council dictate to, not dictate, but to appoint the civil service solicitor from us to them? I'm putting that as a question in general, I guess, not necessarily to Lauren or Valentina.
I took it as a general question. That's why I left myself on mute.
Fine. And that, thank you, Lauren. You read my mind.
So I had a question, and I'm actually trying to look through my papers, but when we wrote the new ordinance that stated that we were going to basically fund a solicitor for the Civil Service Commission, I can't recall, so I can't lay my hands on it immediately, how it was worded in our ordinance, whether it was they get to select and we get to pay, so or whether it just said we provide them.
Yeah, so the ordinance says the borough shall provide the services of the solicitor to be appointed by the commission and paid by the borough. That's what we revised it to say.
So the in essence, it says that the Civil Service Commission will appoint the solicitor. Is that what I heard you say?
Yes.
Okay.
So in all my conversation with Mike, of course, I didn't go back and double check that either, and was like basically relying on Mike's advice. Since he's not here, pile on Mike. So, he did recommend Russ. So, if we want, we can then forward his CV over to the Civil Service Commission, and then they can take a look at it, decide if they say, yeah, we'd like to go ahead and do him, or we want to interview him, or we'd like to look elsewhere.
Yes, if that's the direction, yes.
What does council think? Because in that case, we have taken step to offer someone to them that has come recommended, but they can then decide what to do, because they do need to appoint someone.
So I'm sorry, can you read again what it says? Because I didn't understand the same thing. I apologize.
So it says the borough shall provide the services of a solicitor for the commission to be appointed by the commission and paid by the borough.
Okay, that's clear. Thanks.
Thank you, Julia.
And Valentina, what is the document you're reading from?
So that's the revised civil service ordinance that we just worked on. So we just like revised some sections and added some sections based on ECODE's review of your ordinance previously.
Did we adopt it?
Yes, it was adopted at the May council meeting.
Okay, fine. So, okay, I just want to make sure that was the one in place today.
Yeah.
That's when we didn't meet. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
And essentially, they can put together their own list of people that they want to potentially interview, but there's no reason why a potential lead can't be supplied to them.
Right. And if
correct.
I agree with that.
Corky?
I agree.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I will send over to them with a basic description that Mike sent me with the CV and explaining that, and then ask them to move forward with it. I do know that we have some applications coming up, so I'll talk to you, Nicole, just about that timing, because we just want to make sure that all of that works. Okay. All right. All right. Right to know law. So
this is another policy, obviously, that we're trying to formalize, and we actually have an old resolution with a right to know.
I'm confused. This is all under the solicitor's report. So
we worked with Sue on this, so I'll let her start, and then if you need us to go in, we'll.
No, I'm sorry. I should have let you say and the next thing, and I realized.
All right.
Thank you.
So obviously, there were some things in the law in the policy that's several years old that are not compliant with current law. And so we worked with Valentina to update it and to change some of the language to make it comply with current law. So we are in the process of reviewing it internally. I know that Tara still had a couple of questions about it before we're ready to put it to a vote, certainly, and try and adopt it. But it's pretty straightforward language, and it is in the borough policies folder on ShareFile for folks to take a look at, see if they have any questions.
Sue, can you briefly say what changes occurred from the old version to the new, just generally?
There were some, well, Valentina can speak better probably, but for example, the original policy said that you had to be a US citizen. So that's not in there anymore. There were...
it's on the application attachment. It's still on the attachment.
Oh, I should have taken the attachment off. I apologize, because what's being recommended is the PA standard right to know format. So that should have been changed. I apologize.
So, yeah, it is legal to require residency, but what we advised, like Sue said, to use the standard form, and that's not included. So while that can be a challenge to a request down the line that they're not a resident, just for ease of requests and evaluation of requests, we just wanted to use that form that doesn't necessarily include it. However, it is legal, so... that can be added if the borough wants to use its own application.
I think it makes a lot of sense to use the standard one. What we had before wasn't that you had to be a U.S. resident. It was that you had to be a U.S. citizen. So, yeah, I apologize, Julia. That's just an editing error. I should have taken that out.
Okay.
Other than that, there's really nothing else in. It was more just rewording, taking out certain things, making it clear that the right to know officer was designated to process these requests. You'll see that we provided a clean version of the ordinance along with like a red line because we added a lot of comments. But other than that, just kind of moving things around so they flow easier. Nothing too crazy.
Just based on my past experience with Rights to Know and obviously Judy, you've had a lot of experience over the last few years with requests for Right to Know, whatever the plural is. Are there any necessary guidance that should be in this policy regarding when the right-to-know officer consults with the solicitor to determine how to respond to a request?
It doesn't specifically give guidance to the right-to-know officer on when to do that. It does talk about timing if we need to consult and determine whether it's a public record, those kinds of things, but it does not give it does not give any guidance to the right to know about when to consult with the solicitor.
Should there be anything in our, and since this is a policy, should there be anything in here about any kind of guidance in that fashion, or are we just leaving it up to the right to know officer in case he or she has any particular questions to know to go to the solicitor? I just throw that out as a question.
No, and actually, I do appreciate that question, Julia, because there are times where I question, and in general, if I sense that there could be like potential litigation, then I do run it by the solicitor. You know, if I feel like it's something that, you know, could become something, if it's, if like, or, you know, if it's an extensive, when it was an extensive, all-inclusive kind of right to know request, I'm like, okay, there's a red flag here. This is large, this is unlike anything I've seen before. So I didn't feel comfortable proceeding without going to the solicitor. A couple times that's happened. Or, you know, there was a right to know request regarding the appeal that's happening now, right, with the windows. So when I saw a right to know request for that, you know, I did consult with the solicitor, but that ended up being a pretty straightforward request. We provided what they needed, and that was the end of that.
So I do think that's a really good point. Valentina, do you think you could propose some language for us to put in? What we did was take the old one and try and update it, but you're right, that wasn't in the old one, and so I didn't think to put it in the new one.
Right. So, I mean, the only thing that is in there right now that I could see is somewhat similar to what you're proposing is that a reason to take to ask for an extension, to send an extension letter to the requester, is to get more legal advice. And then you could, if you identify something, then you could send the extension letter and reach out to the solicitor. But if you wanted to put some kind of language, we could figure out some wording that says when they receive the request, you know, within 5 business days or so, whatever you guys would the time period that they should, if they have any questions, they should contact the solicitor. But it seems like Judy already identifies when there's an issue and contacts our office pretty quickly already. But if you wanted to memorialize that, that's fine. We can add that.
The only thing that we would advise be included is that you give Judy a little bit of wiggle room, because, you know, there's always going to be a right to know request that we didn't necessarily anticipate and that Judy may not be familiar with that she's going to want a little bit of guidance on. So you want to make sure that you give her a little bit of wiggle room so that she can consult with the solicitor as needed.
I appreciate that. And you know, and I'm cognizant, right? I mean, if it's something that I feel like I can handle it and I don't think that there's any risk of the borough entering into any litigation as a result of my response, you know, I just handle it, you know. So it's very seldom. It's seldom, and fingers crossed it stays that way, where I feel like it's something that I need to elevate. I mean, I'm only gonna elevate if I feel like it needs to be, because I know that there is additional cost to the borough at that point.
Well, I guess my feeling is that a policy shouldn't be specific to the person who currently holds that job. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't want to write it something that would be so specific that you would have to say, all right, is it A, B, C, or D, and can I do this or that? But if there's some kind of guidance for someone who has to be in that role, who doesn't have your experience and might not have that, like, just kind of feeling internally that, yeah, maybe this should go to the solicitor, that feels a little wishy-washy to me, that maybe
there
could be a little more guidance. Yeah, and it would be helpful for you too, so you wouldn't have to second guess, well, no, I don't know, should I send it or not? But it doesn't have to be hard and fast, but it would just say in situations which have these sorts of parameters, you know, the right to know officer is encouraged, or whatever the appropriate legal language is, to consult with the solicitor. And just that just helps everybody.
I agree.
So the plan then is to go forward with further revision of that section, and the as far as what Judy does, and the, you know, if it's potential litigation, and what are the other action items? That's mainly what I have right now.
to change the right to know request form, which we had had an old one in there, but we're going to use the standard Pennsylvania request.
Okay. All right. So you'll continue to work on that then?
I will.
All right. So, Lauren, do you want to move to the next section? Do you want me to just say something about that? What would you like?
Certainly. My understanding is that there has been ongoing discussion regarding short-term rentals within the borough. And I believe that we were just looking for some guidance as far as what, if anything, the borough would like to do.
So, and then this is my question for council, because I had put out an email a couple weeks ago asking everyone to kind of get back to me with your ideas. I was going to compile it. So if there were several ideas around whether it was noise or permits or parking or whatever it was, put them together in sections so that we could all review it together and then deliberate on it. But I know, you know, we've had the holiday, it's been busy, and I didn't come back like, you know, at the end of last week and say, get back to me. So the question is, I can bring up a few things and at least get the ball rolling and say, how do you feel about these things that I've written down? And we can do that. We can table it and come back when everybody feels ready. This is not the final time. This is more coming up with what the things that we would like in our particular ordinance. Can I get a sense from council what you want to do?
I don't know that I ever got back to you on that because this isn't sounding familiar. Okay.
Nobody did.
I know that. Yeah. Oh. Okay. All right. Good. I'm not the only one. I know that decide if we're going to discuss or not right now, because I know that one of the things that I think would be important is to register your house as a short-term rental so that, you know, we do have some sort of, I don't want to say control over the situation, but some sort of way to say, I don't know, just some way to kind of keep track of it, I guess, in so case anyone has a problem.
Like a permit from the zoning officer?
Yeah, I mean, I know that some bigger cities do that, and I don't know that, you know, I don't know if it's 100% necessary, but I think that neighbors would feel better knowing that, you know, if they are in a close quarter situation, that at least their neighbor had to go right through the right channels in order to rent out, you know, their house.
And I would recommend it, because that way, if there's a complaint that comes in, then either the borough office or the police know who to contact. Because if somebody is renting your house out for a short-term rental and they're not there and there's some issue, whether it's a complaint or it could be, you know, something terrible happening, then we know who to reach out to. So some sort of registration or permit makes sense then, even if they don't, not necessarily a paid permit, but a registration, like you said. So within that category, if they're registering and they're getting permission, would we want them to meet, doesn't have to meet all the requirements of an actual rental property, but would there be some requirements we want to have, for example, the smoke detectors and things like that that are, you know, considered rental safety requirements. So would that be something we might work with the zoning officer on, and we're looking at other municipalities' ordinances and see what they have?
Yes, I think that would be a good idea. Also, we should look at our ordinance with regard to bed and breakfasts, because that does also have a list of certain requirements, which would extend to this as well.
Okay, great. All right, should they have a general liability insurance?
I think so.
Right. I would agree with that.
Okay. And then a time limit for the emergency.
Staying on the insurance policy.
I'm sorry, what?
You said general liability insurance, okay?
Yeah.
That is a property owner's responsibility to conduct the business mm-hmm. on the property. Do we have such requirements for the other businesses in town?
No, because it's I don't think we do. Like, so if they got their license, some for getting their license are required, but that's between them and the state. We don't monitor that, as far as I know.
I don't think you should get involved with mandatory insurance issues, because then you have the question of whether the borough should be a third party beneficiary to that policy. So I'd rather just stay away from that requirement if it's not applicable to other businesses in town.
Somebody had said yes. Whoever said
no. Most businesses would have some sort of liability insurance.
No, but it's not municipal mandatory.
I wonder,
should we be requiring evidence that the owner of the property has notified their insurance cover, their insurer, that they are renting out rooms? I don't know. I mean, it's a question. And then I guess the question is, what kind of regulations are necessary for someone who actually owns a real, like, is renting property, not short-term rental, but long-term rental? What sorts of policies and things are required for that? I don't know the answer to that.
Right. Those are much different. So do we say that we want to follow up with our solicitor and just make some inquiries on that topic, so that we do what is considered standard for the safety of the renters, without putting ourselves in a situation where we have to monitor things we shouldn't be monitoring?
Well, to Julia's point, I also think it's important to see what our B&B ordinance says.
Yeah. And we have that definitely for meeting the requirements, you know, like the safety requirements. Okay. Having the emergency contact respond within a certain time period. We say your emergency contact must respond within an hour. So that way, if the owner of the property is out of town, but they've listed a neighbor as their emergency contact, do we want to have that? Like a time?
Absolutely. I think that's been the problem. I think that's one of the major issues, is particularly if it's not owner-occupied building. And then I guess the second question is, do we want to require it to be an owner-occupied building, which is what our bed and breakfast ordinance currently requires? So that would be another, a separate mm-hmm. question.
All right, do we want it to be owner-occupied? So the owner lives there, and it's not like, you know, the slice of life where the owner is somewhere else and
right.
renting it out.
Right.
I mean, I agree with you. I think it should be owner occupied. Anybody else? All right. I'm going to put a check on that. So.
I mean, owner occupied, but does that preclude somebody that's, you know, renting out an entire house for periods of time, even though?
Yes.
They may spend. Most of they may also spend time there, or
that means that someone can't buy a house in Newtown Station that has, I don't know, 8 bedrooms, and not live in the borough and rent out all those rooms. We've had that issue in various places in the borough. If you say owner occupied, it means the owner lives on the property and rents out rooms that they're not otherwise using.
Well, I think what he's saying is, like, if he's down in Maryland and Nicole's on the shore, and they want to rent out their house to somebody to come to Newtown Borough for a week. They're not there, but they do live there. It is their official address. Is that okay? And I think that's different than having a property where the whole thing is just all rental, short-term rental all the time, versus the occasional, I'm home, but I rent my house out for a week.
Well, all right, so, but then Marv could also be down the shore for 4 months of the year and be renting it out week by week by week by week by week. Do we want that?
So you need a time limit.
Yeah, one of the suggestions in an early meeting was that there be a time limit on how long you could rent it, or how many weeks a year or whatever. Yeah.
Okay. So on your occupied time limit, if you're not there, there's a limit to how much time you can rent it out. Which was, Sue's point that came up. And I believe a resident brought that up as a public comment. Some ordinances have a limit of occupants per persons per bedroom. As long as we're meeting the fire code, do we want to get into that? And then somebody would have to go inspect it, or do you want to say some limit per bedroom? Obviously, it depends on the size of the bedroom, too. Some places have a couple bunk beds.
Yes, you do. You don't want to have 20 people come and occupy a house that has three bedrooms. You don't want that.
So would it be what? Five per bedroom, something like that?
Wasn't there one, there was a table in one of the ordinances that I looked at that said it was two per bedroom plus four additional people? That seems reasonable.
So yeah, I know like we've stayed in short-term rentals where they've got the kids room and there might be like two bunk beds in a single or two bunk beds in a bubble and it's like a big room and it's basically the kids wrap room and you throw them up there. And those are nice to have. So I wouldn't want to preclude that. If you said two per bedroom plus four, then you've got a couple rooms which are like the grown-up rooms or the two twins, and then you could have a room with two bunk beds, but you couldn't have two bunk beds in a bed. So I'd be okay with two per room plus five, something like that. Any other thoughts? So, Julie, you're good.
Because of that, but out of the sense of that, it all come out of information in the permitting also, because then that would, you know, clarify how many bedrooms there were considered to be.
Having, right. Two per bedroom. Well, I guess, yeah. Actually, if you have two per bedroom plus four, that allows you to have a couple rooms with the bunk beds, or like some rooms will have, you know, the double or queen and then like the single bed for a child or something like that. So, okay. Regulating the day guests.
What was that, Tara?
Regulation of day guests, like how many guests they are allowed to have during the daytime. I think, well, one of the ordinances that we looked at, I didn't write down how much, it had like 25 or something like, I think the idea was you could come here, rent a B&B for like Uncle Bob's birthday, and you could have some people over because you had rented the bigger dining room, and you could all gather together, but you can't have more than X many people. And the question is, do we want to regulate that or not? Or do we just want to regulate parking and noise and let them figure out Vegas?
Well, but I think you can only regulate parking in terms of the number of people that are, you know, officially staying there.
Right.
I guess, you know, maybe we'll look at some of these other sample short-term ordinances that I didn't see one that specifically talked about. I guess what you wouldn't want to have is somebody, you know, rent a place for a couple of days to throw a party for 200 people instead of renting a hall.
Yes, exactly. Yes. You don't want that. Yeah. That's why I think one of them had a cap of 25, like, day guests, which would mean 25 people plus the renters.
I think 25 is probably a reasonable number. You wouldn't want more than that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
Yeah, I could see some.
I agree.
We want grandma, and if we have grandma and Uncle Larry, then it's 27. Can we please have 27? And then we're in the position of deciding. They're like, well, it's a really big property. Can we have 27 people? So that's where it just gets a little. Thank you. Do we want to say that we would like to regulate it and we will look into other methods of calculating based on the size of the property?
Well, I mean, because we're just doing, you know, groundwork right now, I think that we should put that on a list of something we want to do, but we're still looking at the exact number.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, and I think we've already established like a couple of years ago that parking is important, right? Providing parking. We all want that, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I think we're all fairly good. We want, like, we want the noise and disorderly conduct. We have a noise ordinance, but given that this is sort of a more excited on vacation, unless they're coming here for a funeral, usually they were here for something more fun, and then it might be just noisier than usual. Do we want to add any extra clause, particularly in the things they might sign off on, saying that they will not be the extra noise and disorderly conduct, you know, beyond whatever is online in the ordinance for time frame. I would like to put that.
I'm looking at our bed and breakfast.
let me see. Although that's usually like maybe two people, it's in the separate rooms, and there are doilies, and doilies preclude lots of noise, as we all know. So.
Well, I only stay at Airbnbs with doilies. I mean, really, Tara. Well, I guess one thing I did see in one of the ordinances, and I don't know if you're coming back to it, is that you're not permitted to have anyone staying in a tent outside. Inside, so you can't have a camper, you can't have tents, you can't increase the occupancy of the yard by having people hang out outside, but they all have to be in the bedrooms. I think that's important. I think we need to think about the fact that, you know, we're not talking about a house out in the middle of the country that has a large yard. We're talking about small homes in a tightly knit, you know, a very close borough where there's not a lot of room, there's not a lot of protection, well, not protection, but there's not a lot of buffering, I guess, between the property and its neighbors. So I think it's certainly within our rights to try to restrict how the property is being used, particularly, I mean, certainly not if the owner of the house holds a big graduation party for their kids. I mean, that's to be expected and understood, and there's some mutual respect there. If it's someone who's coming in and renting three of the four bedrooms and holding a graduation party for their kids in the yard, and it becomes out of hand, then that doesn't really help the neighborhood. So I think something about disorderly conduct something that makes the owner of the house responsible for the behavior of their guests, however that
there
needs
to go. Yes, and no fireworks.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Is that good? Everybody good with that? Owner is responsible, no disorderly conduct, excessive noise, no fireworks. Again, we'll write this up clearly later. Okay, and then do we want to have some kind of penalties for violations?
So the penalty would be for the property owner?
That's a good question. Property owner, renter, how would you enforce it on the renter? They would disappear. Maybe you do put it on the block.
Well, I think the renter would be just like any other citizen. If you get in trouble for violating the noise ordinance, mm-hmm. like, you know, it's basically you're occupying the property. Mm-hmm. But I kind of do think it wouldn't be a horrible thing that if it becomes a nuisance property, to kind of have a, I hate to say three strikes, but you know, like okay, you get a warning, but if this is like an ongoing problem, and I'm talking about for the property owner, not yeah. for the renters.
Yeah, okay.
And then so maybe we could,
If you get a permit, if we're doing a permit, right, that you have to apply for a permit, mm-hmm. your permit gets revoked if you're in violation of the ordinance. Seems pretty simple.
So many times though, right? Like a warning.
Yeah, a warning makes sense. Because sometimes, like a renter can come in and you can tell the renter these things. The renter signs off, you've told them, and the renter sneaks somebody else in. I can understand the property owner saying, hey, you know, I had them sign this and I told them this. So I think that might be good to see how the enforcement and how is that done, because we're not rewriting the law here. This is loads of other places have this. And then one of the things that I thought would be really good to have too is once we have the ordinance is to have a sort of summary explanation for the public and for people questioning, figuring out, and for, you know, obviously an actual property owner who is putting out a short-term rental would want to very carefully know the ordinance and sign off and they've read it, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're, say, a renter, or you're looking to come in, it might be helpful to have on the website a summary explanation of it that is vetted by our solicitor, so we know it's an accurate legal reflection, but is, you know, easy to read, easy to understand. So, and this is not comprehensive, but we've made a start, and so that's good. I'll write all this down, and then, you know, we can come back and say what are some other things we might want to consider, and have a list of things we wanted to look into further. Is there anything else that anybody wanted to say on the short-term rental category at this moment?
That's a good start.
Thank you. All right. So thank you, Lauren. So going back over for solicitor's report, anything else that you have?
Yes, as I mentioned earlier, the council did meet in executive session in advance of the meeting regarding potential litigation matters, and a motion would be appropriate at this time regarding any matters that are on the zoning hearing board agenda that the council would like to take a position on or direct us to attend.
Okay, shall I do this now? You want my motion appropriate now?
Yes.
So with regard to the zoning hearing, which is scheduled for July 16th for 1 East Washington Avenue, which is Rocco's, I make a motion to send the borough solicitor on behalf of the borough to oppose the request for a variance to permit impervious coverage in excess of the 79% previously allowed.
We've had a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
I kept saying second, but I was muted.
All right. So we've had a motion. We have a second. We've been given guidance and advice from our solicitor. Anybody has any other further comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any nays?
Nay.
All right, motion passes. Okay. All right, is that it under the solicitor's report?
That is it. I have nothing else.
Okay. I entertain a motion to approve the professional services invoices.
I move to approve the professional services invoices for May 2020.
Second.
All right, motions, and we've got a second. Any further questions?
So although I made the motion, I do have a question, although the engineer is not here, although maybe Tara, you would know. So there is $4,132 related to the pedestrian bridge. So is that the full amount? And then we recoup half of it from the township?
I believe that has to do with the survey that we authorized, which is part of the, to determine the right of way and to allow the solicitor to develop the easements. So we authorized that payment. That's not for the application. Or a small portion of that might have been towards the application, if you look at the breakdown.
But so that's not, you're saying that's not part of the shared?
No, no. I think a small part of that is, if you look at the breakdown in the fall on one of the other sheets, there was a small amount that might have been towards that, but I think the majority of it actually concerns the land survey.
So you're saying this is borough specific, and then they might have to be doing engineering that's township specific, and then they would have to pay for all that.
Right. And actually, the survey needed to be done to obtain the easements to put in the swale, which is actually...
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up.
Yeah.
We had two authorizations.
Okay, so we put it under the pedestrian bridge, but it's actually part of our stormwater management.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
I don't know if that's something that is okay to have it listed that way or not.
The CKS should know. We can ask them because just in terms of MS4 reporting and if that's an issue, I think under the actual survey they would have it that way. I don't know if it matters the billing because it was billed under pedestrian bridge because we had the swale survey, you know, as part of that process. But yeah, that is the MS4 process that we were already doing at the end of it. So I think, you know, we can still vote to approve it, but I can ask Michelle if their categorization or their records that they can make sure that that's clear how it's applied.
Yeah, I think that's the reason why we're approving the money, but we want to make sure that they categorize it.
Yeah, if you go down from, you've got the bills, but then when you go down into the individual sections with all the pages at the end, then, you know, it's got written out all the things that they do. But yeah, we would want to make sure just for MS4 purposes.
And that's a good point because we're still working off a grant that's for MS4 engineering. So if it's properly categorized, we'll be able to get reimbursed from that, what's remaining of the $50,000 grant that we got. So that's a good point, Mark.
All right. Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right, motion passes. Thank you. Mark?
So following our original kickoff meeting for the comprehensive plan in May, on this past Monday, July 6th, the Newtown Planning Commission and the Bucks County Planning Commission had their first joint meeting as a actual work session toward the plan. Give you a slight summary. One of the things that was discussed was that in 2019, the Newtown Planning Commission had actually done an evaluation, discussion, and review of the, call it, action plans that were in the, you know, previous decades plan. And so that was reviewed prior to the meeting by Bucks County and then discussed at the meeting in terms of extracting the accomplishments and actions that have actually happened over the last years and trying to bring up things that either in process have been, you know, partially fulfilled, might be moved on to the next or that we want to continue with. Second thing, and then what happened is that between our kickoff meeting and now, Bucks County had done a draft of the first chapter of the comprehensive plan, which primarily has to do with population demographics. I'll say one of the, you know, interesting points of that is that in these past 10 years, or I'd call it a snapshot of 2018 versus 2010, is that there is a lower population of young people in the borough. We're getting old. And so part of the planning will be, you know, how do we prepare for the potential now turnaround where some of the houses may again revert to larger families, younger families. So that is an action item for moving ahead in the plan. Secondary to the comprehensive plan, there was a discussion of the E-code saldo aspects. I will leave that to Julia if she wants to discuss that at all under the zoning code portion of the meeting.
Thanks, Mark. Any questions?
So that's a summary of the meeting, and the one action item I'll give for council to think about, we don't have to do it immediately, but it would be coming up soon, is how often do we want to have Newtown Planning Commission council meetings? In other words, so the way this works is the operations are between Newtown and Bucks County Planning Commissions, but we don't want to get too far ahead of the game before we, you know, get council involved. The last thing we want to do is have, you know, disagreements at the end. So, right now, there are monthly meetings between Bucks County and Newtown that stretch for about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Mark?
Yes.
Got to pinch a thing.
Nope, got to bring it closer. So right there, there are like about 9 scheduled meetings between the planning commissions. One possibility would be to have a joint Newtown Planning Commission council meeting every 3. We don't have to decide that right now. People can consider that, and we can come back and, you know, what we want to do is give clear guidance to the Newtown Planning Commission, since council is the owner of the process.
Yeah, and Marv, I know they had the schedule up that Deanna had put together, and obviously things can vary a little bit, but if that can be sent forward to council to look at, just so that those who are liaisons are interested in particular topics, even if it isn't a joint meeting, can make sure to attend, just so that they can either offer their knowledge or just hear what's happening. And
so Judy, am I correct that specifically the comprehensive plan share file is open to all council members?
You're muted.
Yeah, it should be.
Yeah.
Didn't Deanna have an update? Is that in the share file? And I should look for it.
Well, she's going to look. I mean, the updated one, I mean, we'll check. I mean, it should come in, and when it comes in, yes, Judy should.
Okay. So,
I think the idea was the revised plan, which had some minor changes, would replace. I guess we could either version it, you know, as version 2 from the old one, or delete the old one. Maybe it'd be good to keep them versioned, so this would be, you know, version 2 coming in. Mainly the action on the survey got moved up from meeting 3 to meeting 2. There was some discussion of the using the previous decade survey as a basis, and then Bucks County Planning Commission is supposed to come back with recommendations on any, you know, modern updates to that for the future. My one suggestion was that clearly when choices are given for how goods and services are purchased, we now have to include online, whereas that was not a big thing 10 years ago.
There you go. All right. Thanks, Marv. Okay, are you ready to?
If I may, Marv, I just checked in the share file, and yes, in the comprehensive plan share file folder are all the members of the Planning Commission as well as Borough Council.
That's an open book to everybody.
Thank you. Okay, and then Julia, I know we'll be looking at E-code next week, and if you want to talk about the Seldo at the Planning Commission at all.
I wanted to let council know a few things. The Planning Commission did have some comments about the zoning and Seldo changes that we had discussed previously, and what I did was we'll be discussing them next week. So in the E-code folder for next week's meeting, I have uploaded what we had originally discussed and then what the Planning Commission had questioned, and we can talk about them next week. Also what I decided to do is to move discussion of the Shade Tree Commission chapter to October to kind of smooth out the schedule a little bit better. And so that got taken off, and I'm moving that later. One thing that was up on the list of documents for today, and you can take a look at it in advance of next week, was a section of the Seldo with regard to tree replacement that we did not discuss when we talked about the Seldo, which I did send on to the Planning Commission for their discussion. And there was a fair amount of discussion about it, which we'll talk about next week. So if you could take a look at that and familiarize yourself with it and think about whether you support it or not, and we can talk about it next week. Let's see what else I want to tell you. So I told you about the revised calendar and so on, and that's basically it on the zoning and the E-code.
Thanks, Julia. All right. And do we have any old business?
I have one item of, I think it would be considered old business because it has to do with Newtown Common. Way back in the past when we were first starting the project, the Newtown Creek Coalition had made an offer to council that we would help with maintenance in the beginning. And when I was over there a week or so ago with the landscape architect, we noticed that there were a number of weeds, and let's call them native plants that we really didn't want in the common. So there are a few members of the Creek Coalition, along with our landscape architect, will be there this weekend, hopefully weather permitting, to do some weeding in the common. So that's the first item. And then also the Creek Coalition is donating tags of the permanent markers to mark the woody plants, that is the shrubs and the trees. So those should be appearing in the next, I guess, couple months or so. So that will be an asset. Finally, unfortunately, there has been a fair amount of graffiti around town, and the common was one recipient thereof. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, Ron has been able to remove it from the planters and from one of the benches. We'll just try to keep an eye on it and hope that this doesn't continue.
Julia, what did they do to the bench? Because aren't they that power-coated steel?
Yeah, well, they had, somebody had previously scratched something into the table last year. But this year, down at the furthest bench, if you walk into the park all the way down at the end, someone had written on it with what looked like nail polish.
Oh, man.
On it, and in pink and white, and I couldn't quite read it, but it was some kind of tag that apparently has been appearing around town. Perhaps Chief knows a little bit more about this, because I know Ron was in touch with the police department before he removed it.
I was just asking. I was just asking because I feel like one of the good things about those benches are that you feel like they couldn't do much to them, but I guess
Ron was able to remove the nail polish or whatever was being used. He was able to get it off without a problem. Obviously, if you take a sharp object and you try hard enough, you can scratch most anything. And the planters were also marked on the side, but he's able to get it off, and it's taking off that sort of patina that's on them. They're actually concrete that are painted with a stain, and I actually have the stain so that we can repair as we need to, so we'll be able to take care of that too.
Mm. Chief, you were going to say something?
No, I was just going to comment, it looked like a butterfly or a bee type of thing, more like something a child would be putting on than like an adult tagging. I just did want to add one thing under old business is that on the use of force policy, the Bucks County District Attorney is putting together a uniform use of force policy for use throughout the county. That way we'll have some consistency among departments. So once that's available, I'll make that known to council that that's been implemented.
Thank you. Okay. Is there any other old business? Any new business?
Tara?
Mm-hmm.
I'd just like to report, I don't think we put it in the record, that council and the chief were the guests of the Macedonian Church on State Street several weeks ago. The chief made an excellent presentation, and it was an opportunity for council to meet with the religious leaders in the area. Subsequent to that meeting, John Mack of Newtown Township has started a Monday night Zoom meeting. And last night, myself and the HRC Commission Chair for the Township were guests and we were talking about the roles of the Human Relations Commissions in both the township and the borough and our intentions to have our groups work together. So the communities are coming together on a variety of issues, and I just would like that in our record. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks very much. And then that's great that you're taking the time to work with the township. Thank you. Any other old business? That was kind of old business, something that happened. So, announcements. Any new business?
I have some new business. One of the things, one of the PSAB webinars that I attended, and I think maybe a couple folks did, is on pedestrian safety. And the state of Pennsylvania has an organization that will for free come help you look at crosswalks in particular, where they're marked. It's not a full-blown crosswalk study, but they'll look at them. They have different parameters that define what kind of marking you put, if you just put parallel lines, if you put cross-hatching, what kind of signage is best, and different kinds of calculators, if you will, based on the number of lanes and the speed limit and the traffic density. Their website also has all kinds of great information on traffic, and I was surprised at how much we see on Washington Avenue, and also on accidents, which interestingly really had an uptick in 2018. Anyway, they will come for free and help us and train us as well, assess crosswalks that we have and what we might need to do. So I wanted to bring that up and see if anyone had any concerns about it. I don't know if we need a motion to proceed with that, but as I said, it's no cost. So I think it's a great benefit for us to take advantage of. Questions, thoughts?
Yeah, and thank you, Sue. And if you want to look into that and see what the process is, that will be great. And I don't believe we need a motion because we're not spending any money. You're sharing this good information with us. Lauren, we don't need any motion for her to go to LTAP and see what they can do. All
right. Tara, Susan and I also sat in on a seminar about crosswalks sponsored by the State Borough Association. So we obtained information through that source also. So we've been collecting information, which we will share at the appropriate time. Thank you.
And I do have one other piece of new business, and it's sort of odd, but the filling vacancies policy that we did not approve tonight, one of the things that it talks about is giving notice at one council meeting before we appoint someone to a committee that opens up mid-year. So even though it's not yet approved, I just wanted to say that there is an opening on the Shade Tree Commission. And that way, if we approve the policy at the beginning of next week's meeting, then we can appoint someone at that meeting as well.
Okay.
And just to clarify that, I'm fine with that. That's good. But if it is a policy, though, I mean, like assuming that we do approve the policy on Tuesday, it would actually be that we have to announce it at the council meeting and then get the application within 7 days before the following council meeting, right?
I believe so.
When I read the policy, I only read that an application had to have been received 7 days before.
No, there's another part of it that talks about mid-year vacancies. And it says that there has to be an announcement at the council meeting.
So I guess again, I think this counts as a council meeting, don't you? I mean, this is a council meeting.
Unless you want to say council meeting or work sessions, right now it says at a minimum at the council meeting following notice of such a vacancy. If we want to say that it doesn't have to be just council meeting, it could be council meeting or the work session.
I think it that should be a revision. It should be, yeah. I look at work sessions as kind of a council meeting, so I think
if they are council meetings. Yeah. But,
so
I, but
so if we need to put, you know, work session or council meeting in the policy, then we can do that.
Yeah. Why do you choose to call one a work session when they're both council meetings and we vote on things at both of them? I'm not sure, but I'm happy to make that change because the intent was that it be either meeting.
Well, that I know, but like on the calendar, it says work session. It doesn't say council meeting.
I know I have had a problem with that verbiage since I joined. I don't think it makes sense, but that's another topic for another day.
Well, for the sake of the policy, maybe the wording could just be set, you know, stated if the intent is that
public
commission or council meeting, that it say any meeting of council.
Yeah.
All right, there you go. Thanks, Judy.
You're welcome.
Right, and the purpose of the 7 days in advance is to give that time for it to be distributed to council and for everyone to review it.
Okay. Well, and to give other people opportunities to apply.
Oh, no, I meant the deadline, like you have to get it by 7 days in advance.
So. Right.
Are there any other new topics?
I have a question for the chief. Now that we're in, I think, green, according to the color code for behavior, how is traffic in town? And do you see an increase in vehicles and bicycles and pedestrians? And how's traffic flow going?
There's definitely been an increase in traffic. Traffic flow, you know, has been moving. We had a few accidents, more so than we had during the COVID shutdown. There was hardly any accidents. So, yeah, there's been a definite marked increase in traffic.
Yep. Bicycles also?
Bicycles as well. Since we're on the topic, are we going to be continuing the moratorium on parking enforcement, or are we going to be ending that?
Oh, that's a good question. I think Bob is going that way, because I know I had emailed you a couple weeks ago, Chief, to ask where we were. At that point, we were still lower than average. But Bob, you had brought up wondering if we wanted to bring back the usual enforcement, and that would depend on the need and the use of parking, where we are with that.
Well, since we're in green, I don't think there's a reason not to have parking enforcement. Mm-hmm. So does it take a motion to do this?
I believe so, because we made a motion to suspend it. But Lauren, what would you say?
Yes, and I apologize. My internet was glitchy there for a second. We're going to be essentially revoking a motion that was previously made during the COVID pandemic.
Is suspending parking enforcement, and we've been doing that the last few months, and now traffic has gotten back to normal. People are looking for parking spots again. So the question is, do we want to suspend?
Yep. Like, if we're
unsuspend the suspension.
If we're going to resume parking enforcement, then yes, a motion would be appropriate to do that.
Okay.
I will move to reinforce the ordinances on parking.
I think resume.
Resume the enforcement of the ordinances on parking as such ordinances are in the borough code, effective immediately with this meeting.
Do we have a second?
Second.
So I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
If we end up going, back into yellow again, can there be somewhere in the motion that, I don't know, I guess I'm just kind of afraid that, you know, businesses are affected again, like trying to give them a break, but.
So. Yeah, the trade-off is if there's no enforcement, then sometimes it impacts the businesses because then you don't get that changeover in customers. But Nicole, you have a really good point, because if say we go back to yellow, can we then revoke it again? Would we want to, I don't know, is that something we should put in the motion?
Well, I don't think it's either yellow or green that automatically trigger enforcing or revoking. I think we're hearing that traffic is and parking desire is returning toward prior levels. So that's why we'd be doing it. So if it went to yellow and then potentially if the demand reverted again, then we could consider it.
So we'll just revisit.
You can. It's a decision that can be revisited at any time. And as you know, okay. The Commonwealth and the borough continue to operate under a declaration of emergency. So if there is a situation where it would become appropriate for council to again suspend those regulations. Sorry. If it became appropriate to suspend those regulations, that decision could be made and then ratified at a future meeting.
Okay, great. So, yes, I think the emergency committee could do that, for example. I have one concern about the fact that immediately, because if you have got members of the public who are used to the suspension, unless they're listening in to us, and so far it's just we've got a husband and we've got Bernie listening in, nobody else is going to know. And right now we don't have Jeff Warner with us either. And I would want to give some amount of time for that to be made aware to the public, to put it out, for example, on the police Facebook page, or we should at least give them some period of time, whatever that might be. I don't know, Chief, do you have any thoughts on that? Chief?
So Tara, I was gonna suggest that we make it effective on the 15th, which would allow you to make a second announcement on Tuesday evening. And it also will be happening like in the midweek as opposed to on a weekend.
And we should publicize it however we publicize the, rescission of the.
Give a chance for Jeff, and we can even ask him to put it out there. Hey, Chief, what do you think about communication?
Yeah, I think if we made it the 15th, that would be good. And we'll put something on our Facebook page. That should be sufficient. I've already been asked the question many times by some of the particularly Wichel's employees, and I sort of gave them a heads up that it was likely to be tonight that the moratorium on non-enforcement would be lifted. So they sort of had a informal discussion that it was probably going to be tonight.
Yeah.
But I can put something.
And I think the Newtown Mercantile Group should be notified too from that standpoint. Give it to Carol Richardson and allow her to spread it among the members of the Newtown Mercantile Group too.
All right. Thank you, Corky. Good point. Okay. Yeah, and they can put that out on their Facebook page and just sort of let the public know that. And it's all good news because it means that people are out and about and shopping and doing things again. So. Mm-hmm. All right. If we got anything else, and thanks.
We need a motion. Wait. We have to modify the motion, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. All right.
I move to revoke the suspension of the enforcement of the parking restriction ordinances effective July 15th, 2020.
Okay.
Okay. I second.
All right, great. All in favor?
Aye.
Any nays? Motion passes.
Will Judy notify the Mercantile Group? Pardon?
I will let Carol know.
Okay, thank you.
Bob, thank you.
All right.
All right, thanks. All right, does anybody have anything else? Okay, we have any public to be heard? All right, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Any nays? All right, motion passes. The meeting is adjourned. It's not even fully dark out yet, folks, so that's great.
8:49.
Good job.
Thank you, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Thanks. All right, good night, everyone. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Hi. Thanks, Judy.
Thank you.
I'll make sure everybody's gone. Yep. Okay, bye.